Safety, dependability, and power. Chevy Silverado isn't happy unless the work is hard and the day is long. No wonder Silverado is America's number one best-selling retail pickup truck. Go to ChevyDriveChicago.com and put a Silverado in your toolbox.
Thinking big thoughts so you don't have to.
Today,
here's John Williams.
Planning on having two. It's 109. Hi, it's John. We're in the Allstate Showcase Studio on Michigan Avenue. Thank you. Thank you for tuning in. Please stay here all the way until 3 o'clock. Ro Khan, Anna DeVlantis will entertain you at 3. And we'll just warm up the seats until then. Maybe Democrats obstruct. Maybe they really do. And maybe the media is not fair. And maybe the Republican plan for health care was a better idea than Obamacare, which we still have. Either way, the president you just heard says he will not own it. I'm not going to own it. Well, it was never yours to begin with, Mr. President, but that also means that this isn't on me. And in fact, this failure categorically is. And what the president doesn't understand is that bullying and lying and intimidating doesn't work. Doesn't work. It gets you a lot of likes on Twitter, but governing in a democracy is about persuading people. So if the president gets thousands of people to boo you at his rally and calls you the enemy of the people, then it's hard for you as a member of the press to treat him fairly. And maybe you do, but if there's an error, you can't wonder why that happened. It doesn't happen in a vacuum. People are people. Things happen. If you fail to include Democrats in the crafting of a bill, then they might not like you or it might not like them. How can he not understand something so fundamental as that? That the way you treat people matters and that it will come around and bite you. And so there's the president distancing himself from it and blaming other people for it. The blame for the failure of Congress to improve the way we deliver health care in this system or its costs or try to make us healthier, is on the president. He didn't have much to do with it, but he just made it impossible. He just made it worse. That absolutely is on the president. I was skipping around last night, got the Twitter alerts, and it said that the two senators are pulling out, and so it's not going to pass. It's not even going to come up for a vote. And the headlines across the internet last night were about the failure of this signature campaign promise of President Trump. And at 10:43 last night, the headline on Fox News was, quote, "More Obama officials scrutinized in unmasking probe." I forgot what the unmasking probe was or is, but evidently it's still going on. And as the world was pausing to note that we're not going to improve health care in this country, Fox News had the headline, "Obama officials scrutinized in unmasking probe." That was their headline. That was the big one with the picture and the bold type and the subsequent follow-up stories. And then after that, they had a story about the failure to change health care. And then they had a story about tattoos. And the tattoos one was pretty good. We're going to talk to somebody from Kaiser Health a little later on about why the Senate bill failed and what the hope is for improving it, because it ain't, you know, this is the sad thing about it. I don't know if I love Obamacare or not. My health care never really changed, and it's inexpensive for me. Most people are fortunate enough to not need the exchanges. Most people in this country can afford health care, but way too many can't. And Obamacare didn't fix it for everybody. And the shame of it is that nothing's going to change. Nothing's going to change. At least not for now. We'll talk about that in the 2 o'clock hour. We'll also at 1:30 talk to a reporter from the Minneapolis Star Tribune about what the heck happened there. You know, when they first said that that officer shot that woman from Australia from his car window and that he was the passenger police officer, I thought he was leaning out his window and shot there. But no, he actually shot through the car. He was sitting in the passenger seat. He shot across the officer who was driving through his window and killed the woman as she stood there. How does that happen? After 1:30. I was actually in a Starbucks the other day, and a woman was coming up to the Starbucks. It was early in the morning. There were just a few of us there. And as she was coming up, you could tell she was sort of a chatty lady. I didn't know if she's listening to music on her buds or was just talking to no one in particular. But I also noticed that she had, as she was approaching from a distance, what looked like a really unfortunate birthmark or scar or discoloration on her chin. Her whole chin, she was I'm not sure what nationality she was. She wasn't Caucasian, but she wasn't real dark-skinned either. Caramel colored, I'll say. And yet her chin was very, very dark, like the black of a tattoo ink. And as she got closer, I realized that from her bottom lip to under her chin were just a series of dark tattooed lines, so that her whole bottom jaw now was colored differently than her face. And she was real friendly and chatty. And when people are friendly and chatty, you tend to look at them and chat back. But it was so hard to, because you thought, is this a crazy person? Am I staring at her tattoo? Should I say, wow, you have a different color jaw? Usually tattoos are a signature. They want noticed. But you couldn't. So it was just very strange. And everybody was avoiding her glance there at the Starbucks. That other story that was on the Fox News website that wasn't talking about healthcare, that was about the tattoo, is this. Mark Kropp just wants to get a job and support his family. But something unique is holding him back. A giant tattoo that runs from his earlobe to his nose and around his face to his other earlobe and then goes all the way down his jawline. Reads Devastate. DEVAST and the number 8. And what they did was they wrote it in his flesh. That is, his whole bottom of his face is one dark tattoo. But they saved the flesh-colored spaces for the D, the E, the V, etc. You get it? It's sort of a reverse sort of thing. So that the skin is the tattoo and everything else is ink. That's his face. He said he had it inked a few months ago while drunk on homebrew in a jail cell in Christchurch, New Zealand. So he's in jail. Somehow he's got himself drunk there. And they have tattooing, I guess, in the Christchurch jail system. And he got somebody to do the bottom half of his face with Devastate. Now he's out. He has a girlfriend and a child. And he's being critical of the world because nobody wants to hire him. Nobody wants to hire him. He's a spooky looking dude. My point in either case is that I think the tattoo artists have some sort of obligation to, when the drunk person or even the sober person says, I want to get this tattoo and you know it's a bad choice, don't take their money. Don't take that gig. You have a moral obligation to not let somebody in. If somebody said, hey, give me that knife, I'm going to stab myself in the eye, you wouldn't give them a knife. If they said, hey, give me that something and I'm going to make my life worse, you wouldn't do it. That's you. If you are tattooing somebody's face with Devastate, if you're putting black lines under a woman's lips, you are defacing these people. I know it's a free country and stupid people can do what they want, but you don't have to help them do it. And whenever I see those tattoos, I wonder, what was it like? Was the person who is laying the ink down grimacing a little bit, thinking, boy, the money better be good? Or maybe the money's not good enough. Or maybe the money just is. But how do you do that? If you're a tattoo artist, how do you mark somebody up like that? I don't know what the rules are. I'm sure that it's against the law to tattoo somebody who's high or drunk. I'm sure that must be against the law, right? They must sign a thing or, I don't know, you make them touch their nose. Steve, when you got that giant eagle on your chest.
Yeah, I was not.
I should ask Judy Pilak about hers.
She wasn't either.
Yeah.
So, you think you have to give them a sobriety test before you tattoo someone?
I think the tattooee, yeah, the person getting the tattoo, probably needs to demonstrate their mental wellness.
Well, you definitely want to give the tattooer one.
I know. I misspelled Devastate. Sorry. And that actually happens. By the way, Aleph, if we have any calls, I'm not seeing them on that screen, FYI. It's 118. Okay, so I need your comment too. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. Give me your take on my take and tell me what you know about that. It's 119 on WGN. All right, here now we do have calls. 312-981-7200. You can also text to that number. At 1:35, a reporter from the Minneapolis Star Tribune talks to us. Or are we doing that at 2:30? I think at 1:35 we're doing that. We're doing that. We're talking to a reporter, Andy Mannix from the Star Tribune, about that bizarre police shooting of a woman also from Australia. Okay, April, you're on WGN. What did you want to say? Hi, you're on the air.
Hi there. I did send in a picture. I have a very large tattoo. It's on my thigh. I'm a teacher.
Yeah.
And it took me a very long time to decide what I was going to get, where I was going to put it, and then have the guts to go get it. And as I did, I thought about several factors. Well, it can't show just in case I'm hired where I can't have tattoos. So I wore the shortest skirt I would wear to school and make sure it was higher than that. But maybe if you had to wait, you'd consider other things before you would
right.
get a tattoo, a waiting period, because it's not just about the tattoo, but it's about the placement, its size, the colors.
How many sessions? How many sessions did your tattoo take?
It was 1 3-hour session. It was long, and I was mostly uncomfortable since I tolerate pain well, and it's a meaningful tattoo. And when I'm working out, people can see it, and I get compliments, but I forget it's there when they're staring at my thigh. But and I'm considering another one. That's just a saying, but I don't know where to put it. And that one will probably take me a very long time to pull the trigger on as well.
Yeah, I wonder if, like, say it took 3 hours to do that guy's face, because they did his face. I mean, it's, you think about Mike Tyson, for instance. Whoever did Mike Tyson's face, you'd think that the guy would go, Mike, this is a bad idea. I know you can afford it, but this is a bad, and try and talk him out of it. I haven't seen your tattoo. I'm sure it's lovely and meaningful and doesn't say devastate across your face. You don't have devastate written across your face, do you?
I did text it in with my name, April, on it. But and it's about 3x7 with lots of colors and lots of details. And, and my sister was the one who kept asking me, are you sure? Are you sure? Are you sure? And it had taken me 2 years to come up with a concept and with positioning, and then take it, and then finally take the step to go to the artist and say, here's an idea that I have. Can you give me a drawing and help me?
Did you have to prove your sobriety when you went to get it? Did they ask you to sign anything?
No.
See, they should. And you would pass.
I think so too.
You should have to prove
not
that
always,
you're. You should prove
I am
that you're
a teacher, you know.
So yeah, I know. If you're not nuts, then you will be soon. Fair enough. All right. Well, listen. Interesting. I'll look for the tattoo. Thanks for texting it in.
You're welcome. Bye bye.
Okay, April. Thanks for listening. Now you can text to 312-981-7200. This is Tom. Hey Tom, you're on the air. What do you say?
Hi John. The guy who has devastate was probably done in prison.
Yeah, it was.
And the prisoners actually do those illegally, but it's quite common. My youngest son was a corrections officer at a state prison, and they were always confiscating materials that the inmates would tattoo each other with, and the most unbelievable tattoos you've ever seen, but it's fairly common.
Do the teardrops under the eyes represent people they know who have been killed?
I'm not sure. I don't know if that's a gang kind of thing.
Yeah, I don't either.
I'm sure they would put anything on anybody
anywhere
inside the prison. Right, because they don't care.
Oh, man.
And
wow.
The same son is actually having a tattoo removed by laser, and he says it's 100 times worse getting it removed than having it put on, so
really?
People should think twice before they do it.
Tom, thanks for the call. My best to your son. Have
Thank
a good day.
You
betcha. Lynn, you're on WGN. What do you say?
Hi, John.
Hey.
I love your show.
Thank you.
I'm kind of surprised at your comment about the caramel-skinned woman with the tattoos. I would imagine that she probably is from New Zealand and is from the Maori tribe, and it is considered a thing of beauty for the Maori people to be tattooed on their faces. The men get tattooed all over their bodies. And it,
I wondered that. Yeah. In fact, I had Elif look it up before we came in. I said, is it Maori? I say Maori, but whoever those people are, the natives of New Zealand, it looks like that. I just don't see that in the Starbucks that often. And if I knew I was ever going to move to the United States and I was in a Maori tribe in New Zealand, I would still think twice about coloring my face that way, because life in America will not be easy for you when you get that done.
I'm sure. But I was actually there and was a viewer of one of the Maori tribal war dances. And it's pretty amazing. You know, they do it because, it's, you know, handed down from generation to generation to scare off people who would come in and invade their tribes and take their women or their whatever, their farmland. But yeah, it still is considered a thing of beauty.
Huh. Boy, oh boy, oh boy. Cultures are different things, aren't they?
Yep.
No, I appreciate the heads up on that. Hey, Lynn, thanks for the call.
You're welcome. Bye.
This is Lori. Lori, you're on WGN.
Hi, John. How are you?
I'm good. What do you say?
Well, I just wanted to say that the place that I go and get my tattoos, they do not do face and hands.
Really? And they won't even do your hands?
Uh-uh. No, because it's something that people can see, and if you do, you know, go to a job interview and they don't like it,
you can't hide it. You can't hide your hands.
Exactly.
You can hide your sleeves. You can wear a long sleeve shirt and a turtleneck sweater.
Exactly.
But...
yep, exactly. That's one of the reasons why I go there, is they are very respectful. And about the drinking, I mean, they also tell you if you drink before you get the tattoo, you're going to bleed more. So it kind of thins your blood. Yeah. So that's one thing I don't want to do, is bleed more.
But to your knowledge, then, you don't have to sign a thing saying I'm of sound mind or pass a sobriety test. There's no blood test for alcohol. You can come in.
You
can come in drunk.
You do have to sign a form, but that's just permission for them to do it. But no, they just, I think if you came in there smelling like alcohol, they would probably tell you, you know, not a good idea.
Yeah, no kidding. Wow. Hey, Lori, thanks for the phone call. By the way, April earlier sent us her, here's her tattoo. It looks like the bottom of a shoe. Like a sandal, but instead of tread, they're flower petals. And in the middle of the top part of the shoe is 3.1. And then below are some dates, including 26.2 and 13.1. I'm going to assume those are the dates that she ran a half mile and a marathon, a half marathon and a marathon, but I'm not exactly sure what the whole backstory is. When I get to be king, y'all can tattoo yourselves up, but you'll have to pass a field sobriety test and a I'm not cuckoo test. And I don't know how we are going to do either of those. It's 1:30. I'll give you a Lou Malnati's pizza, a certificate for a deep dish lose, if you can tell me why I'm playing this song. I love it, but there's a sort of commentary in the selection of this song. You tell me why this song makes sense to bump with today. Just text your answer to 312-981-7200. That's W.
Sometimes in our lives, we all have pain. We all have sorrow.
I'll come back to the song in a little bit. Isn't that a great song? Why will he be bumping? What's so clever about that, mister? 312-981-7200. From the Minneapolis Star Tribune today, she called the report of a possible assault in the alley behind her house in one of the city's safest neighborhoods and was unarmed when Officer Mohammed Noor shot her. I'm reading Andy Mannix's story about Justine Dam, and Steve Bertrand's been talking about it, too. This woman from Australia has died of a gunshot wound to the abdomen. They found a cell phone near her body, according to his report. Just before 11:30 p.m. Saturday, Damond, age 40, called 911 to report a possible assault occurring in an alley near her home. What happened next is hard to imagine. That reporter Andy's on a phone line right now. Andy, you're on WGN in Chicago. Thanks for taking our call. How are you?
Hey, doing well. How are you?
You know, I lived in Minneapolis for a while, and I'm sorry to hear that you guys are continually plagued by these unfortunate police shootings.
Yeah, and you know, that's kind of important context here. We are just a few weeks off of a very controversial trial of a police officer who shot a man named Philando Castile about a year ago. That was sort of high profile because the passenger in the car, Castile's girlfriend, broadcasted it on Facebook Live. So, you know, some of your listeners may remember that video going around. But the officer was just acquitted by a jury a few weeks ago. So, you know, as you can imagine, the tension between police and the community was already strained before this. So that's, you know, just a little bit of context of where this is coming in.
And that story was so startling, especially with the release not that long ago of video from the camera, which showed the officer firing into the car, that you'd think all the police officers in Minnesota would be on guard to be extra conservative in the use of their weapons. Excuse me. I mean, don't put yourself in harm's way, but make sure you need to discharge your weapons, sir. And what happened? So there's a report of an assault. The police arrive at 11:30 in the evening in a very, very safe neighborhood of Minneapolis. What happens next?
So, you know, there's a lot we don't know, so I'll couch it in that. But, you know, the report from what we can tell from the dispatch was, you know, she heard a woman screaming, thought maybe there was an assault taking place. So she called 911. Like you said, it's at night. She's in her pajamas. She comes out into an alley to, you know, talk to the police officers from what we can tell, because she was approaching the driver's side. The passenger in the squad car, a police officer named Muhammad Noor, fires his weapon. We're sort of unclear why that happened, but, you know, shot through the door of the police car, so over his partner. You know, as you can imagine, that is, you know, there's some questions just about the, you know, is he putting his fellow officers' safety in jeopardy? You know, why this doesn't really seem like a normal maneuver. But, you know, it as you say, strikes this woman, Justine, in the abdomen, and unfortunately killed her.
Have the police said that it was an accidental firing?
No, they have not said either way. They've been, so in Minnesota, our state police are called the Bureau of Criminal Apprehension. In situations like this where it's a high-profile incident, this can be highly scrutinized. It's pretty common for a police agency like the Minneapolis Police to have them investigate it, so they're not, you know, perceived as having a conflict of interest in having their internal affairs officers investigate it. So they did that sort of right away on Sunday. You know, they didn't wait to do that. They did that very quickly, and in doing that, they're sort of deflecting, you know, their responsibility, I think, to answer questions about this, because
right. They're
saying, well, it's an open investigation. You know, we got to wait for the BCA, the Bureau of Criminal Apprehension, to do their thing. So we've heard very, very little from Minneapolis police at all, other than the chief coming out with a statement yesterday saying she's got a lot of questions too, and you know, asking for a speedy investigation. But at this point, they have offered nothing in the way of clarity in terms of, yeah, was it an accidental fire? Was there, you know, what did this officer have reason to believe his life was in jeopardy? And, you know, unfortunately, you know, a lot of these incidents have some kind of video component. The officers were wearing body cameras, but they weren't recording in this incident. You know, I don't think we're ever going to have that objective video record.
But they were in their squad car. When they roll up, they're obviously in their vehicle. So it's not unlawful for them to not have their body cameras rolling at that point, right?
It's not unlawful. The policy is a little bit nuanced. I mean, there are certain situations where the policy says you must have your body camera on. If you're arresting somebody, if you are, you know, even pulling someone over for a traffic stop. But in terms of, yeah, when you're just in your squad car, you know, the language is a little fuzzy in terms of they leave it up to the judgment of the officer. You know, a question I and I think a lot of other people have are if he's in a situation where he's drawing his firearm, you would think that would be a situation in which it would be appropriate to have that recording going as well.
Yeah, right.
Again, you know, did it happen so fast you didn't have time to do it?
Well, how long was she at the window of the driver's side?
So we've gotten conflicting reports about that. We're really not sure if they exchanged, you know, if they were talking for a minute or if they even exchanged a single word or if she just kind of walked up there. You know, a lot of what we know for sure at this point is based on sort of where she was lying after the shooting. So she was very, you know, near the driver's side window, basically. But yeah, we don't really know if there was an exchange that took place. If so, what that exchange was. You know, I mean, the demand for more information is really palpable here.
Yeah, I don't think the cops do. I don't think the cops do anybody a favor. I know they got to do their investigation. Sometimes releasing information too soon jeopardizes what witnesses will say because they've heard a report on the radio, so they'll try and jibe with that or not. But I think a lot of times they're so cautious that they do everybody a disservice. I mean, answer some of the basics. The race, particularly when race is involved, but it's not in this case, right? I mean, she's a Caucasian woman, nor is not African-American. Is he Somali-American?
He is Somali-American, which does, I think, you know, create a level of complication, I guess, to put it lightly.
Yeah, I guess you're right.
You know, we don't really, I mean, I'll tell you that I'm screening my calls today because, you know, a lot of people with theories about that like to call us and ask why we're not taking certain angles that, you know, just aren't factually based. But, you know.
Well, the point if I may, what you may be alluding to is the fact that there is a rift in the Minneapolis and the Twin Cities communities about the Somali Americans and the and other Minneapolitans, Caucasian Americans. There's a rift between the Somali community and the rest of mainstream Minnesota. But that's still, whatever that is, doesn't have anything to do with this officer shooting that lady, unless we knew something else specifically about them or the incident, and we don't. Here's a scenario that I wonder if anybody is imagining. The police are responding to a report of an assault in an alley. I heard woman screaming. And then they pull up, and a woman is coming running at them. Maybe she's part of some sort of exchange. And she has something in her hand, and she comes up to the window. Okay, that's a scenario where I can imagine the cops would be on guard. I mean, that's the only scenario I can imagine. Otherwise, it's just... You've got to imagine it was a mistake but why would he have his gun withdrawn from the passenger side inside the squad car, pointing across his partner? You can't imagine that he would even have the gun in his hand at that point.
Yeah, you're very well articulating my inner monologue. You know, as we've been just in the newsroom trying to figure this out, no explanation seems to make perfect sense. You know, a lot of things you're saying, she had a cell phone. There was a cell phone found near the scene. Did that, you know, in this situation, in the darkness, appear to be a weapon? We just don't know. And that's, you know, and to your point before about the police officers not doing them any favors, I mean, on its face, the information we know is a woman called 911 and the officers came and shot her. And that's a really sort of troubling message without the nuanced detail or some sort of explanation, whether it ends up being an accident, whether it ends up being a move of panic because he thought he saw a weapon,
right.
You know, whether there's some element of this that we just have no idea about yet. I think whatever that is sort of needs to come out sooner than later because the conclusions that people are drawing are, you know, it causes people to panic. It causes people to get frustrated. And as I mentioned before, there's already some frustration with the police relations here. I think that there is a great need for more information.
Front page story across Australia. You note in your story, the Sydney Morning Herald's headline yesterday was American Nightmare. And that's funny because I'm calling you from Chicago. I mean, we know about people shooting people, cops shooting people, people shooting cops. This sort of thing per capita does not happen that often in the Twin Cities, but you've had a few high-profile cases, that's for sure. No body camera video in this case. You know, and the other thing, though, is that in that previous case where that diamond girl took the real time when she was FaceTiming, or not FaceTiming, live streaming on Facebook, you understood that the officer sort of panicked. You could hear it in his voice, and later you could see that by the video, he just reacted too quickly and inappropriately. And that's my guess what's happened here. You'd think that they would, I don't know how you train the officers in Chicago or Minneapolis to de-escalate rather than, you know, back away from the car. Good grief. If you're in the car, I don't know, roll out of the car. Don't shoot across your partner. But it just seems like too many of these police officers are too quick to pull the trigger these days. There's another inner monologue.
Training is definitely something that we are interested in. You know, what kind of training did this particular officer have? He hadn't been on the force that long, but, you know, they don't just hand out police badges to anybody. You know, he went through a lot of training. He got a license from the state board that issued that license. We have done some, because of these past incidents, we actually had two over the past 2 years. Another guy named Jamar Clark, unarmed black man, shot by a Minneapolis police officer in sort of a struggle. You know, we have really looked hard at that de-escalation training. You know, things like there's sort of these like warrior mentality kind of conferences that the officer in the Castillo case, you know, we found out had gone to. So we're sort of interested in are they subscribing to a philosophy that maybe would. You know, I mean, we can't get into the heads of these guys in these moments, but you know, maybe lend itself more to that, you know, when you pull your gun out.
Yeah, right.
Sort of aggressive.
it all the time. I mean, frankly, cops often arriving on a scene are doing so because somebody has done something wrong, and often they've done something specifically that the officer asked them not to do. You know, put up your hands or put your hands down or get on the ground. It's too often people don't cooperate. And the cops just get super hostile right now. And they've got a gun and they get to use it. And I don't know what needs to happen, but, you know, you don't need to play patty cake with these people. And you can't put yourself in jeopardy. But we've got to figure out a way to de-escalate the tension. And all of that testosterone pouring out, I don't think is doing anybody any good.
Yeah, and, you know, I think we all want to make sense of these. I mean, so with the Castillo thing, it's different. You know, again, as far as we know, he did have a firearm. He had a license to carry it.
Yeah.
And all that. But, you know, you could, I don't know, the fact that there was a weapon in that one makes it, I think, different than this one, which is as far as we know. I mean, we know they certainly didn't recover any kind of weapon on the scene. I think it makes it a little bit harder for people to wrap their mind around. And, you know, sometimes you wonder if you have all the training in the world and how you're going to react in that moment of panic, you know, where it is usually a matter of a few seconds, you know, maybe you don't really know. So, you know, in a way it's, I don't want to oversimplify it, but, you know, I think that, you know, the training thing goes so far, but people aren't used to being in a situation like this, and when it happens, you don't get much warning.
Yeah, right. You only get one first time. Andy Mannix is on a phone line, reporter for the Minneapolis Star Tribune. I've got quite a few questions about this incident, Andy. Just give me one more minute, and we'll wrap this conversation up on WGN. I've just got a few more minutes, Andy, but a lot of questions and calls from our listeners. Will you try and answer a couple of questions for us?
Yeah, happy to.
And by the way, I know that you can't. I mean, the information is so limited, but let's just hear what's on some folks' minds. Don, you're on WGN. Hi.
Hi. Something in the story just didn't ring true to me. I read that this officer has had three major complaints against him. One has been dismissed, and two are currently active, and they are not minor incidents. Why is this officer still on the street?
What about that, Andy?
Yeah, and we don't really know the nature of those at this point. How the public data laws work here is if he's disciplined, then we would be able to get a lot more of what went into that investigation, what the outcome was. You know, a lot of police officers get complaints filed against them and stay on the force. You know, I mean, anyone can file a complaint against a police officer. It's really up to that investigation to determine whether or not – it is a legitimate complaint, and then, you know, what the outcome should be. And if it is punishment, it could be that a police officer would be dismissed if it was a serious enough complaint. But I mean, it's not uncommon to see, police officers who, I mean, you know, it's like, you know, they say kind of the first on scene are the most likely to get a complaint filed against them, just because they're sort of in the action, you know, in the moment. There's just a higher likelihood someone's going to leave feeling like they weren't treated.
I understand that. But thank you for the call, Don. I'm going to go from you to Melissa, because Melissa, though, says when those officers arrive on the scene, I said there's way too much testosterone. What did you want to say, Melissa?
I just want to say it's not testosterone. It's called adrenaline. You're talking about people who have to go onto a scene. They're running into the problem. They're not running away from the problem.
Yeah. No, I think
I'm not justifying what happened, because I don't know what happened. Nobody knows what happened, and I'm fair and impartial, but you have to understand it. It's not testosterone. It's adrenaline.
It's it's impossible, difficult work. I don't think we're grateful enough. We take the cops for granted. We wish they weren't there when we see the cherries in our rearview mirror, but then when you need them, you really want them on the scene, and you do want them to get in harm's way. It must be both. I'm going to stand by testosterone, but adrenaline, you bet. And one last call. Lee, you're on WGN. What did you want to say? Hi.
Hi. Hey, I live out in a fairly major crime-free area, and I recently witnessed, and I'm getting a call, sorry, I recently witnessed a Caucasian woman be stopped in a church parking lot, and she just didn't get it. And the police, as I was walking in, I noticed her, you know, giving her clear instruction, and she's like, oh, I'm so sorry, but just let me get my purse, let me get my book. And they became very quickly very agitated, and the same thing could have happened. We'll know as time goes on. But as a person, if I am stopped, right or wrong, I have to clear my head and follow instruction.
Well, that is so lost on so many people, and I think you are so right, Lee. Thank you for the call. I'm out of time. Andy, can we call you again maybe in the next few days as this story evolves and we find out more information?
Yeah, most definitely.
Yeah. Good work up there. I'm a big fan of your newspaper. Keep writing, and we'll call you again, okay?
Okay, thank you.
Andy Mannix writes for the Minneapolis Star Tribune.
Thinking big thoughts so you don't have to.
Thank you, Steve.
Here's John Williams.
This is John. One of my big thoughts earlier today was that you cannot get a tattoo if you're drunk.
Lord have mercy.
Or crazy. Or high. And someone will have to figure out how to determine that there at the tattoo parlor. We'll have trained psychoanalysts and sobriety testers. The cost of a tattoo will go up to $64,000. I don't care if you get a tattoo, but I just think that it's morally or ethically wrong to give somebody a tattoo you know they're going to regret. How do you do that? And then we got this text about that. It says, hey, John, I face paint for parties, sporting events, and bars. If I had a dollar every time a group of men offered to pay me $100 to paint on their friend's face without them knowing it, I would be rich. But I would also be an immoral business person. Even though I'm a face painter and I want people to have fun, men in large groups are awful to each other. That last sentence is kind of true, isn't it? I don't know that a gaggle of gals will do that, but a bunch of guys, they'll felt tip that dude's face or pay a face painter. Of course, you shouldn't pass out at a bar with your buddies so the face painter can get to you, but at least it'll come off. Face paint isn't permanent. But this is a face painter who won't even face paint, let alone tattoo people who he thinks should not get that tattoo or that face paint. Nobody's got my little trivia question right yet, Steve. It's something I'm going to reveal. We'll resolve this before 3 o'clock.
Does it have to do with the name of the singer, the lyrics, the...
Here's the song we've been bumping with.
It won't be long.
I said, why am I playing this today? It has some significance in the news. It's a bit of a commentary in a way. Maybe commentary's not the right word.
Please.
But if you're paying attention to the news and WGN radio, just before 3 o'clock, I'll give you the answer, and you'll go, yep, I get it, I get it.
Okay, I got it.
Should have thought of that. I'll give you a large Lou Malnati's pizza if you get it right.
Don't love your knees, that you won't live.
Love that song. It's 212 on WGN. Text your response to 312-981-7200. Do you really think you have it? You really think you got it figured
out? Yeah, I do. 100%.
Now, I'm not going to let you say it on the
radio. No, I wouldn't.
I'm just not sure that you have it. I'm almost willing to roll the dice and say, go ahead and give us your answer because I'll bet you'll be wrong.
One word.
No. No, I don't think
I was just going to make up a word. I wouldn't do it. I'm not going to give it away.
Okay, then.
Alabaster.
No. Don't let him lead you astray. He doesn't know what he's talking about. Tell Elif what you think the answer is. And then if you're right, I'll personally get you a Lou Malnati's pizza. Steve, how does that sound? You game?
No, I don't need dinner.
As you've been hearing in the news, and this is not the answer to what I was just talking to Steve about, the president is unhappy, as really all of Americans should be, that the Congress was not able to improve health care. I mean, that's my attitude about this. I'm not sorry that they didn't repeal and replace Obamacare. I never saw Obamacare as a bad thing. I think it's an imperfect thing, and I think it'd be great if they could fix it. Well, they can't seem to get around to doing that. They were only focused on repealing and replacing. Then the president asked them to at least just repeal it. We'll replace it later, but they're not even going to get to that point. And so now the hope is that, in fact, they'll just say, okay, let's pick some of the parts that we all agree need to be addressed, and let's fix that. And hallelujah, said people from coast to coast. That's what we wanted you guys to do all along. The Democrats had their way. They made an imperfect thing. The Republicans have promised for 7 years that they were going to throw it out, and they couldn't. So now, why don't you all just get together and fix it instead of worrying about whose name is on it? Here are the president's most recent tweets about this. Republicans should just repeal failing Obamacare now and work on a new health care plan that will start from a clean slate. Dems will join in. Then he tweeted, we were let down by all of the Democrats and a few Republicans. Most Republicans were loyal, terrific, and worked really hard. We will return. And then he tweeted this, as I have always said, let Obamacare fail and then come together and do a great health care plan. Stay tuned. I didn't know that's what he always said. I didn't know he was always on the let Obamacare fail and then we will replace it with a better plan.
A great plan. Did he say great plan?
A great health care plan.
See, that's the problem for me is when he kept on the campaign, he talked about how it was going to be great for all and cheaper and better coverage. And he just didn't have a realistic view of the situation, I don't think.
With only a very small majority, he then tweeted, the Republicans in the House, yeah, but you do have a majority. I know you don't have 60 Republicans, but he makes that sound like a burden with only a small majority, with only a very small majority. The Republicans in the House and Senate need more victories next year since Democrats totally obstruct no votes. And finally, he tweeted to you today, the Senate must go to a 51-vote majority instead of the current 60 votes. Even parts of full repeal need 60. 8 Democrats control the Senate. Crazy! Crazy! He said. So that's your president talking to you. Get this person on the phone. See if you can call him up. Steve, I do believe we have a winner to the bumper music trivia question.
Yeah, it wasn't me. I was wrong.
The bump.
I was. I really thought
what
I was
your
right.
Guess?
Well, I don't want to say.
Okay. Well, Elif is reaching out to the person who did text in the correct answer.
Well, she told me I was wrong, so I thought it was some flood relief.
No, it is not. Lean on me when you're not strong, and I'll be there to carry on. Yeah, that would be kind of a commentary, what we should all be doing for each other. Just call Lonely Brother when you need a hand. We all need somebody to lean on. Yeah, that would work. Maybe that's a dual answer, but not the one I had in mind. After the 2:30 edition of WGN Radio News, we'll visit with Elizabeth Rosenthal, the editor-in-chief of the Kaiser Health News. We'll ask her what hope there is that we can, in fact, repair Obamacare the way we all want. But before we get to that, I just wanted to go back to a story we talked about yesterday. Have you seen the latest on Delta versus Ann Coulter? Delta versus Ann Coulter. Money.CNN.com had an article last night. Why this is a big deal. And I'll get to that in just a minute. Let's talk to Ray first. Hey, Ray, it's John. You're on WGN Radio. How are you?
I'm fine, sir.
I see that you're calling from the 309 area code. Are you in Peoria?
Actually, no. I'm close to the Quad Cities, where we played the golf this weekend.
Ah, got it, and, got it.
Yeah, we're from Geneseo, though, and we're coming back from seeing James Taylor last night.
I rode the train with a lot of JT fans last night who took the Addison stop. How was it?
Oh, it was terrific. You knew the answer. Yeah. It was wonderful. It was really well done.
From where I live, I could hear the crowd, but not the music. And there'd be every, you know, a James Taylor song lasts 3 minutes. So every three, four, five, 6 minutes, you just hear, wah! And I thought, that's 30,000 60-year-olds losing their mind. How nice is that?
There are quite a few younger people. We weren't one of the younger people, but there were quite a few. I was surprised myself at the differences in ages, and they seemed to appreciate it as well. And Bonnie Raitt was great, I thought. I thought she was wonderful, too.
You know,
anyway.
Yeah, but one more question about JT last night. So what was the – was there a hit song? What did he open with? What did he close with? What did he knock out of the park?
Oh, I think I can't remember what his opening was. I mean, and he played everything. He played a lot of stuff that I'd never heard, and I thought I heard everything.
Yeah.
And he did a lot of montages behind the stage of his childhood and his family. And then he introduced the band and all that, and different people who were in the band. And the whole thing was very well done.
Nice.
And I sat kind of up in by where the WGN booth would be, you know, where the announcers would be. I was climbing up there, but it was a perfect spot. I needed a binocular to be able to see, but the acoustics was terrific.
And with the
big screens, it was you know, very well done.
Ah, it's all great. Okay, now, I've been bumping with this song. Go ahead, Elif. I said, it's a riddle. Why are we playing this song today? And Ray says, why?
Because the bill withers. The Trump care goes down in defeat.
Bill withers.
I
knew there'd be one of them out there.
That's the man who sings this song.
Sometimes in our lives.
You disappointed? Are you mad at me now, Steve?
Well, I'm not mad. I'm not really disappointed.
Yeah,
mostly I'm just not surprised.
All right. Listen, I'm going to send you a certificate for Lou Malnati's Pizza. Next time you're in town, be our guest, okay?
Thanks very much. We listen to you all the time.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Ray, stay right there. Bill Withers. You see, the bill didn't pass. They didn't get to vote on it. It kind of just withered. I was reading Huff Post last night, and that was the big headline. Bill Withers.
Say it again.
Say what again?
Bill Withers.
Bill Withers, yeah. Okay, I'm done now. If you need an effective real estate agent who can expose your home to the most buyers by creating a unique marketing and offer strategy, and you do, that's what you want, and ultimately negotiate for you the most money possible for your home, then here's a recommendation. Amy Kite with Keller Williams Realty Infinity. Not only are Amy's fees flexible, but you will actually receive an immediate offer. And here's how she does that. Amy helps you negotiate through multiple offers resulting from her stellar marketing plan. But if that doesn't sell for the price and the deadline that you agree to, she'll pay cash for your home. Anita knows all about Amy Kite. Anita came back with a third property, and Amy knocked it out of the park. 11 showings, 7 offers within a week. Under contract in 6 days, they sold it for $10,000 over ask. Call the only agent I would call if I needed to sell my home, Amy Kite, 847-877-9881. Online, visit amywillsellyourhome.com.
Trevon's Living at Grays Lake at 1865 East Belvedere Road in Grays Lake is now open and helping seniors live life uplifted. New residents are so excited to experience their vibrant lifestyle that they leave their adult children at the door.
In fact, for siblings Nancy and Ray, that's exactly what happened. With a newfound independence, their mom is happy, thriving, and feels right at home. Through award-winning Viva programming, residents get involved and grow with plenty of social, recreational, and cultural opportunities. And now, for a limited time, the senior living services you want and the assistance you need can be yours at incredible savings. New residents who make a deposit and move to Trevance Living at Grays Lake will save $3,000 and gain a priceless new lifestyle. Schedule your visit today to learn more. Call 847-278-9388. That's 847-278-9388. Or visit TrevanceLiving.com. See what's making Trevance Living at Grays Lake residents leave their children at the door.
Play ball, celebrate the Cubs with team memorabilia, exclusive books, and so much more. Visit ChicagoTribuneStore.com today. It's 2:22. Want to get to the Ann Coulter story, Delta versus Ann Coulter, in just a minute. Before I do, though, Elif, just to sort of preview our conversation with Elizabeth Rosenthal. She wrote a book about healthcare in America. She's the editor-in-chief at Kaiser Health News. I want to play two sound bites for you. The first one is the Obamacare fail Trump one that we've marked here. Elif, this is the president talking about the failure of the Senate to bring the repeal and replace bill to a vote.
We'll just let Obamacare fail. We're not going to own it. I'm not going to own it. I can tell you the Republicans are not going to own it. We'll let Obamacare fail, and then the Democrats are going to come to us, and they're going to say, how do we fix it? How do we fix it?
Yeah, maybe so. But they're not going to own it. It's the president either passing the buck or assigning blame to somebody else for his and his party's failure to fix health care. And if the Democrats didn't vote with it or enough Republicans didn't vote with it, then isn't it incumbent upon them in the majority to figure out a way to do that? And bullying and criticizing and name calling evidently doesn't get the job done. It's a lesson the president still hasn't learned. Mike Pence spoke about not that, but about the failure to get Obamacare repealed and replaced. And this is what Mike Pence, the vice president, sounds like.
Inaction is not an option. Congress needs to step up, Congress needs to do their job, and Congress needs to do their job now.
Whenever Pence talks, he sounds so much more presidential, doesn't he? Even if you don't agree with him. And I have no problem with Mike Pence. Generally, I don't know him, don't know his policies that well. I think we all know enough about him to know that he's on the ticket and who he is. But you don't know what a Pence presidency would be like. You have no idea how well he would be able to work with the Congress, but you get the feeling he would be able to work better. Lord, he couldn't work worse. When I see or hear Mike Pence, I don't know if this is just me because our ears are tuned a little now more closely to President Pence commentary, but when I hear him talk, he seems so much more presidential than the person sitting in the Oval Office today. It's almost remarkable how big the difference is.
Well, it's funny because if you're progressive or liberal or Democrat or whatever, you know, your personal policies are more like the president's.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And
Pence.
But many of you can't stand the current president, so you'd like the alternative, and the alternative is a lot more conservative than President Trump.
Absolutely. What I'm trading for is sanity
right.
for conservatism.
And stature.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, I didn't agree with everything George Bush stood for, and you may not have agreed with everything Barack Obama stood for. But at least you believe that person respected, appreciated, they understood the office. They knew how it worked. Current resident has no clue. I would make that trade in a second. And when you hear Mike Pence talk, you go, oh, yeah, that's what a Republican president would sound like instead of this. So here's Ann Coulter. Day two. Day three, what is this in the Coulter versus Deltagate. Reading at CNN again. Delta's responses to her Sunday and Saturday tweets are really interesting. Chris Isidore said that she elevated it, or they elevated it, from a typical celebrity tweet storm to something larger. And in an age when airlines are almost universally reviled, Coulter's polarizing persona led her many critics to embrace Delta's response. It only added to the attention the dispute got on social media. That's the danger. If you're Delta, it's so easy to send a snarky tweet back to Ann Coulter. And you know she's unpopular enough that you'll score points. But you also then prolong the news cycle about the story. The story is Ann Coulter was asked to change seats, and she was outraged. And even though she was in the same row, she now had to sit by the window. She'd paid $30 extra for extra leg room. She still had extra leg room in the new seat, but she didn't want to change, and she didn't like how she was handled. And now she has the hashtag Delta Sucks going out there, and people are saying they're going to boycott Delta. Why? Because Ann Coulter was asked to move from 3C to 3D? I just don't understand that. Coulter did not just attack Delta. She even attacked the other passenger. She tweeted this: immigrants take American jobs and seats on at Delta. So evidently the woman that she posted a picture of who took her seat looks like she's not from the United States.
So, okay, that's unbalanced, right? Is that the nicest thing you could say?
Say that again.
Right?
I don't know what your point is.
Well, that's insane.
Oh, yeah, that's...
That's mean. That's it, this
that's
person
bringing
is,
a hand grenade to a knife fight. That's just not fair.
Well, it's just out of whack, right? So I think Delta wins points if they defend their passengers.
Speaking out of whack, did you see then? So in this story, they went to the former ethics officer for George Bush, who gets so much press these days.
Yeah, he's very vocal.
It's funny because, you know, it's logical. The president is, we've never dealt with a billionaire businessman president. So we have all of these questions about should the president divest of his holdings, et cetera. Those are political, ethical issues. And that you have an ethics officer doesn't mean you're unethical. It means we need some guidance on what the rules are or interpretation of these should be. And so they went to that guy, and I'm looking for his name in the story again here, and I don't see it. Oh, yeah, Richard Painter. Richard Painter, the law professor, who has been a frequent critic of President Trump's business conflicts, has now suggested that Coulter herself should be put on a no-fly list for her tweet storm. Quote, safe skies may require adding another wing nut to the no-fly list. TSA should read these tweets, he tweeted. Not sure that he's helped with that, but if the person tweeting is nutty enough, maybe they shouldn't get on the planes either. Back to the story. Coulter also implied that the problem with DeltaGate, DeltaGate agents, is that they are protected by a union. When she tweeted, "Does your union hate you at Delta? Not really worth spending all that money on planes when at DeltaGate staff gives your seat away." But Delta gate agents and flight attendants are not members of a union. Delta apologized that Coulter did not get the seat she had pre-booked. They said they would refund her $30 that she paid extra. But it added, more importantly, we are disappointed that the customer has chosen to publicly attack our employees and other customers by posting derogatory and slanderous comments and photos in social media. Her actions are unnecessary and unacceptable.
So she took a picture of the woman who ended up in her seat.
Correct.
And tweeted that out.
Correct.
As if it was somehow that woman's
fault
or responsibility or whatever.
Yeah, or hostility towards her to 1.6 million people.
And then she's called her an immigrant?
And then she said, yeah, this, well, I'll read you the tweet again. She said, Coulter did not just attack Delta. She even attacked other passenger. Including the one who was sitting in the seat that she was assigned to sit in. Coulter called her dachshund-legged and implied that she's an immigrant when she tweeted, immigrants take American jobs and seats on at Delta. That's Ann Coulter. The health care bill did not only get improved, it didn't get repealed or replaced. To talk a little bit about this, once again, Elizabeth Rosenthal, editor-in-chief of Kaiser Health News. Elizabeth, thanks for joining us again. I hope you're well this afternoon.
I am. Thank you.
What happened?
Well, what happened?
And then I'll just sit back and listen.
I think the numbers didn't add up, right? If you say you're going to repeal and replace Obamacare, then you propose a plan and promise that it will give more people better care for lower costs. And then the CBO comes out with its score that says actually 22 million people or 23 million people are going to get uninsured and premiums are going to rise. You know, it's the numbers don't add up. And I think that's ultimately what, you know, tank the bill. And I think the bright side of this is finally at last we saw health care outflank politics and partisan politics in the end. But it sure took a long time to get there.
I'm surprised to hear you say the CBO score mattered. I remember when we really acquainted ourselves with that on the House version. And then the Senate version, we also found out 20-plus million people would lose coverage eventually. And I don't know, I didn't felt that that resonated so much the second time around. I thought that was going to sort of be a wash. You actually think that was significant, huh?
Well, I think more and more people were realizing that repealing this bill and replacing it with what the Republicans were suggesting was going to work out badly for them. And that fear is big. You know, what we saw, ironically, is Obamacare's popularity was rising pretty steadily as this debate was going on, because I think even the people who maybe had second thoughts or qualms with it, excuse me, or quibbles, felt like, well, better the devil that you know. And of course, you know, no one would say, I think, Democrats or Republicans, that Obamacare didn't have its issues and we do need to fix them now, assuming it doesn't get repealed, which it looks like it won't. But I think it also had, it did some really important things that the Senate bill would have taken apart. For example, ensuring that people with pre-existing conditions could get insurance. And as we all know, a lot of people have what insurers would consider pre-existing conditions, like asthma or diabetes. I wrote a little op-ed for the New York Times, you know, confessing to my own three pre-existing conditions. You know, I have asthma, I once had an abnormal pap smear, and I was once on antidepressants. You know, that puts you in a high-risk pool and could make your insurance unaffordable if you're buying it on the open market. So the title of the piece was, We All Have Pre-Existing Conditions. And I think the more people heard about the Senate bill, the more they felt, I'm vulnerable. And the more they heard that 22 million people could lose insurance, they looked around for the first time and realized, wait, I could be one of those people. And they saw it in some of the states that expanded Medicaid, which were red states. They would have been one of those people. So I think it was kind of a wake-up call for Americans to realize, hey, healthcare is about us, it's about me, and we have to act that way. And, you know, that was kind of, not knowing this was going on, I wrote this book last year called The American Sickness, or An American Sickness, just about why American healthcare is so expensive and why Americans weren't more engaged in it. And now I'm really happy to see that they are.
About that book, by the way, you just, a lot of times people write about big topics like this, healthcare, defense, taxes. Your book is so good because it breaks down so many of these complicated issues into very specific anecdotes, very specific bills, very specific people and line items. You made this thing really resonate in a very real way in An American Sickness. I want to put that plug in there for you.
Thanks. Well, I hope so, and I hope, you know, that as people watch the healthcare efforts to you know, to change our healthcare system to make it better, they realize that it doesn't have to be this way. You know, we're spending two and three times more than everyone in the rest of the world, and we can ask for better. You know, we should feel entitled to that instead of feeling like, as we have for a long time, oh, you know, what can I do?
Well, that's an interesting point. But
these premiums.
What? But go back for a second to this Senate version. The president says that he is not going to own the failure of the repeal and replace movement, and that Obamacare will fail on its own now, and then the Democrats will come crawling to him. Fine. Who, though, does own the authorship of this Senate version? If this bill wasn't good enough, is that McConnell? Is that the president? Is it some wonks? I don't know. Who wrote this thing?
Well, I mean, we believe that McConnell and his staff wrote it by and large. You know, it was said that there were 13 Republicans, all male, who wrote the bill, but you saw right away that two people who were supposedly among those 13 immediately said they couldn't support it. So how involved were they? But I think everyone who opposed Obamacare, all the Republicans, really have to take ownership of what's happening now, because they ran for so many years on, you know, this is terrible. It's responsible for rising premiums. It's responsible for the costs. Well, P.S., it wasn't really responsible for any of those things. I mean, we've seen those in the commercial markets as well. So the rising premiums, rising copayments are endemic to the way we do medicine, our medical system. And Obamacare, you know, for its flaws, for not controlling those things, did some important things that I think no one wants to lose. The Medicaid expansion, covering people with pre-existing conditions, preventing lifetime caps, preventing insurers from cherry-picking the patients they want, which is really crucial because, you know, insurers are for-profit businesses in this country, and they're going to cherry-pick the most profitable people. And I don't think any of us wants to end up in a purely commercial world where medicine is just about how you can do things to make the most profit. But that's kind of where we're headed now, and so I now think it's Congress's responsibility, now that everyone's kind of been forced to grow up and look at the reality of healthcare and hear from all these constituents at town hall meetings, to take this seriously and do something real rather than this kind of kabuki theater of, oh, we're going to make it better, or, oh, we're going to make it cheaper, without actually producing a plan that would do that.
Well, so then the mantra became, instead of repeal and replace, repeal now, replace later. If we had repealed, or if we yet do, if we just repeal Obamacare, and A, what does that mean? And B, what would we have then? What would the law be about health coverage in this country if we don't replace it with something?
Well, it would be a real problem. And as first of all, as my colleague at Kaiser Health News, Julie Rothner, likes to point out, you can't just repeal Obamacare. They don't have the votes to do that. To fully repeal the bill, you need a lot. You need 60 votes. They don't have that, clearly. So they're trying to do this through budget reconciliation, which means there are parts of the bill they can undo. But really, you know, doing nothing is disastrous for insurers, because they need the certainty of what will the market look like,
right,
in order to offer and price plans. So I think the nothing, well, the good thing about doing nothing is, sure, it will probably leave a lot of the important Obamacare provisions in place, but it will also, you know, it creates a kind of uncertainty that means if we're trusting on market interest, insurers may not step up to the plate, because the market doesn't deal well with this kind of massive uncertainty about, well, what kind of health system will we have in 2 years? What will the Republicans do to replace it? Will they do something like they're doing, you know, they tried this time, and will we still have this pre-existing condition problem? Well, then maybe insurers can kind of find a way to sidestep that for a couple of years if they think that's coming.
Right.
Out.
So if this is imperfect, at least it's like you said a moment ago, the devil we know, at least we can predict, we can figure out where we're going with this. But if we did start to tweak it, I mean, that's what I'm hearing now, too, Elizabeth, that all right, well, let's just take some components that both sides agree need to be addressed and piecemeal that. What would some of those be? What would some of the things be that they could and should attack?
Sure, and that's really important, because there were always things that could be done at the national and state level to make the Affordable Care Act work better. And, in fact, the GOP spent a lot of time trying very hard to make it work worse by not providing the funding that was promised to support some of the state insurance cooperatives, for example. But what could we do? You know, people on both sides of the aisle have done a lot of screaming about high drug prices. Why in the U.S. do we pay so much more than people in other parts of the world for the same exact prescription drugs? Okay, there have been several bipartisan suggestions to address that, like letting Medicare negotiate drug prices, like a joint bill by Amy Klobuchar and John McCain to allow importation of drugs from overseas in a controlled manner. Now, you know, you can quibble about, well, you know, that neither of those plans might work perfectly, but I can tell you they both would bring down drug prices, and they're both better, I think, than what we have now, which is people just can't afford to take the medicines they're prescribed because they're so expensive, and not because they're so much better than anywhere else in the world. They're the same. It's just because we kind of have acceded to pay whatever the market will bear, and we don't have a real market. So likewise, you know, the Obamacare started some pretty interesting experiments in what we call bundled payments, where you give a hospital a set amount of money for doing a surgery and the aftermath. The current HHS secretary has been rather opposed to that, but we could go back and do much more with that model. We could say that hospitals, instead of charging willy-nilly what they want for procedures, if you want to take Medicare money, you have to agree for private payers that you're going to, say, take Medicare plus X amount.
Mm-hmm.
There's so much we could do if we had the political will to do it. At the state level, our insurance commissioners could regulate those insurance provider directories that we all know are just ridiculously inaccurate. You know, you go and find a doctor that's in your plan, and the first five you call say, oh, I that was last year, or that was last month, or I'm not taking patients. If I were an insurance commissioner, I would say, you know, big fine. You can't sell insurance in our state if you keep doing that. There's so much we could do to make the system work better and to make Obamacare work better. And instead of trying that, we've kind of started anew, or the GOP started anew this year. And, you know, we'll see what happens next. They've now, both sides have kind of said, well, maybe we should work together in a more transparent way. That would be nice, but there will need to be a lot more political will on both sides of the aisle to do more than just kind of hold hearings every time there's a, you know, an EpiPen moment where a lot of mothers get upset about high prices. They're going to need to act, and there are actions.
Elizabeth Rosenthal is the editor-in-chief of Kaiser Health News, and again, her book is An American Sickness, not The American Sickness. She stumbled on that, and I thought that was pretty funny.
Thank you.
An American Sickness. I'll call you again, Elizabeth. Thanks for your time this afternoon.
Thank you so much.
My friend and colleague here, Marlene Wells, just came in and mentioned to me some bad news. Mike Mathis, who for many years was the traffic reporter here on WGN Radio, has passed away. He was just recently inducted into our Walk of Fame. Mike was not only a great friend to so many of us here, he was a terrific broadcaster, and he had his due at the Walk of Fame ceremony. He wasn't in great health that day, and a lot of us didn't know that. His family has a history of heart health issues, and Mike has passed away. So our best wishes go out to his son and daughter, his wife, Mary. They're a lovely family. They've always been so generous with all of us here.
Mike, I am in shock over that.
Mike, I know, Judy,
it's
I'm sorry you're hearing this for the first time.
Yeah.
But more information about this will be in the news and on our website. Mike always threw the best pool party every summer. He said, here's the date for the pool party, and we'd all go, and he'd cook up a bunch of burgers and brats, and he'd have his pool going and beers and sodas. And it was one of the few times you got to see a whole bunch of people at the station just relaxing.
Right. My kids still talk about those pool parties.
I love those
pool
parties.
They were awesome.
If Brenda couldn't come, Grant and or Griffin would. We'd play ball in the yard. Matt Bubala would bring his kids. We'd just have a blast.
They were the best hosts.
They really were. And he was a guy who loved Chicago and loved WGN Radio and loved talking to you. The wake is tomorrow. The funeral is Friday. Mike Mathis has passed away. I don't have his age here, but I know that he was not that old either. I think he would have been, Judy, maybe early 60s?
Maybe, yeah. I mean, he was young.
Yeah, I know he was, and I don't know exactly what the cause of death was, but I understand that it was related to his heart, and many of his family members did not live as long as he did. They have a history of heart health there. Give me the age again, Elif. So 68, still too young. Mike Mathis, our beloved, longtime Hall of Fame traffic reporter, has passed away. Don't forget to go to WGNradio.com/events for details on our next Teddy Roosevelt show. That is August 12th. I know you can get tickets to one of the shows. I think the other one has sold out. One last note about Mike Mathis, and you'll hear more about him at WGNRadio.com, too, in the coming hours. But Mike was just a square shooter, too. You got these slick hotshots like Rokon and famous people like Anna DeVlantis, and then every now and then there's just the voice of sobriety, of civility. And Mike Mathis was that. Passed away at the age of 68 today. Our best to his family, his wife Mary. Always generous hosts. And a guy who would kind of laugh at some of our shenanigans. You didn't work with Mike at all, did you?
I never had, no.
You would have enjoyed
listened
working with
to him.
Yeah,
quite a
sure.
bit.
And I would have loved to have heard him sort of just roll his eyes at you a little bit. And he would have, and it would have been perfect when he did. So, again, our best to all of them.
Yes, absolutely. His family, you're right.
How are you guys? Welcome in.
Thank you. We are, well, let's see. Speaking of WGN families, Mr. Skilling's going to join us right off the top here to talk about important things related to the weather. Because, well, quite honestly, it's too good to be believed. And
really
when something like that happens, I start to wonder.
Well, Deck Tech is supposed to come and sand and paint my deck tomorrow.
Ooh.
I really need about 48 hours. I need 48 to 72 hours of no rain. I need it to be dry, and it can't rain, and a little sunshine would help. But if you could just pass that along to Skilling.
Skilling can handle that.
I'll make sure Skilling gets that information, and he passes that along to the appropriate authorities.
You know. He's as close to the appropriate authorities as anybody when it comes to the weather.
About
he can
right.
do it.
Yeah,
it's as close as that gets. Also, Brett Baer is going to be with us also in 3 o'clock hour from the Fox's channel talking about the death of the GOP health care plan. Mm-hmm. And Sarah Huckabee Sanders blamed it on the Democrats. Totally the Democrats' fault.
Well
none of
that.
Them did vote for it.
That's true.
The president said because we only have a very small majority, it was impossible to pass, as though having a majority is a burden. Better that they had a minority, you know, then it would have been easier.
Oh, that would have been much easier. Well, when they had a minority, or at least when they had a majority and then there was a veto, they were like, we'll pass anything.
So now the president wants to change it like the Supreme Court. 51 ought to get the job done.
Yeah.
Let's not do that in the Senate, kids. Come on.
Yeah.
Come
yeah.
On.
All right.
What else? That's it?
As far as you can tell. Don't worry about it. It's all fine after that. Oh, and Richard Roper is going to tell us about the movie he says is an absolute Oscar Best Picture nominee right now. Maybe the best picture. So far, the best picture of the year.
Sounds exciting.
He'll be here for that.
I know that he said it was the best movie he saw of the century. Remember that?
One of the best movies. Best romantic comedy he's seen in the decade. That was The Big Sick.
The Big Sick, yeah.
Right. And so now this is a movie that has come out that he said is the best movie of the year thus far and a certain Academy Award nominee for Best Picture.
Is this a new movie?
Yes.
Well, I guess of course it is. But I mean, it's like one that just came out.
We're not naming it.
Gone with the Wind. He's decided that for sure is going to get a nomination.
I'll think of some dumb questions later too and text him in. All right, well, go ahead.